You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Now, as Huber mentioned, this work on nanoclocks is essential for understanding how to design the best nanomachines. Quantum physicist John Beckhofer at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia has also been building mini-engines, this time from glass beads suspended in water or suspended from optical tweezers. He's using his tiny machines to investigate how to make nano-engines more efficient, and also to better understand biological information processing, as he told reporter Colin Stewart.
In the modern world, information is all around us, but can it be used as a source of fuel? Helped by an FQXI grant, John Beckhofer from Simon Fraser University in Canada is leading a team exploring the efficiency of information processing in the quantum world. I started our conversation by asking him how efficient information processing is in our everyday lives.
Information processing really does suck up a lot of energy usage in real-world applications. And if you look at data centers and our own usage of computers and so forth, I think the estimate was something like 5% of electricity usage in North America can be linked to data processing in one way or another. And when one looks at energy consumption in biological organisms such as ourselves, then it's even more striking that the base metabolism of the brain is about 20% of the normal metabolism of ourselves.
And we often find that the efficiency of our computers is far away from the optimum possible efficiency.
Yes. And of course, I mean, we have a screen, we have various other parts that are not necessary. But even when you strip all of that away and look at the processing, we're still factors that are 100 to 1,000 times higher, even in the best of cases. At least part of that is linked to the fact that we want to do computations quickly. The fundamental thermodynamic limits that people such as Landauer and Bennett originally formulated for how much does it cost to process information and carry out the operations of a computer, those are met in machines that work very slowly. And since people want computers to be fast and information processing to be fast, then there's a tension. And so one of the things that we've been investigating in this grant is what happens when you want to process information. We've been focusing on a specific operation, the erasure of a bit of information at a finite speed, and how can you optimize that operation, even when you want to do it quickly? What is the protocol that you need to follow in order to do the best that you can?
You're exploring this through both theoretical and experimental work. Can you tell us what your experimental setup looks like?
It's a small glass particle, about a micron in diameter, that's in water. So it's just moving around in water. And because it's so small, the water molecules that are hitting it produce fluctuations that we can see. This is called Brownian motion. And the particle lives in a potential that produces forces. And our typical setup is what's called a double well potential, which is something that has two possible positions that the particle can be. And those encode the state of being 0 or 1. So this is very, very far from technological applications. It's less far from biological ways of encoding information, where two different conformations of a molecule could encode information, whether something, a protein, is folded or unfolded or something like that. Our interest in that system is that it's one that we can control precisely and do precise measurements on. And so it's a test case. And if we understand this better, then we can start to understand more complex systems.
What have you discovered so far?
So the main experimental results that have come so far have been in a slightly different system, where we've been focusing on information-fueled engines. So we are doing experiments on bit erasure, but those are just in some sense getting started. The COVID actually did delay us for that particular part of the project. On the experimental end, on the theoretical end, we were doing pretty well. But on the experimental end, where we've made good progress is on creating an information-fueled engine, where it's somewhat of a similar setup. So we use a device called an optical tweezer, which is a sharply focused laser beam that can hold a particle, such as the one I was describing, a micron-scale particle in a fluid. And we have a horizontal tweezer holding a heavy particle, so it sags a little bit. It's as if you had a heavy mass on a spring hanging from a support. And because this mass is in a fluid, it jiggles up and down because of thermal fluctuations. So imagine that every time it goes up a little bit, and you see that, that you move the support up in just the right amount that you don't do any work on the particle. So it goes from being slightly compressed to slightly expanded, the spring. And in that way, the particle will have fluctuated up, and you move the support up in a corresponding amount. You've raised it without doing any work on it. And this can be repeated. And so you'll be lifting up a heavy particle without doing any work, apparently. Of course, there is really work being done, and it's all hidden in the computations. So we're not doing work directly on the particle, but the measuring system and the feedback control has to do work in order to function. So this is a consequence of this limits that Landau and others first proposed long ago.
And what are you hoping to learn by doing these experiments?
We can actually make one of these things. And so the question that we've been exploring is, what are the performance limits of this kind of engine? We have an engine that can make a particle go, and we're also storing work. So we have a heavy particle that's been lifted, and we could drop that particle to do some kind of work on demand. One of the things that was really interesting for us is to find that we could actually get significant velocities and significant powers extracted from this. They're small in a macroscopic sense, so velocities on the order of 100 microns per second and powers of 1,000 times KT, which is the thermal energy unit per second. But to put them in perspective, these are the kinds of speed that a bacteria would move around at, and the kind of powers that are involved in the motors that power machines within cells. So these are significant amounts of power and velocity or speed that can be created through these information-fueled engines. That's something that's really interesting because this is a new kind of engine. The thermodynamics of it are different. The way it works is different. And so we've been trying to understand just what can these engines do. And that's sneaking up on the question about why would you want to do this? And that's something that we're still trying to puzzle through. We know that in some cases it could be more efficient to power an engine this way than through a more standard direct way of driving it. But I think mainly we're just trying to understand their characteristics well enough to then understand why would, in general, one want to build such a motor. And then, of course, we could look in biological examples. There are plenty of engines that look like they're more or less functioning like these information-fueled ratchets, and maybe understand, well, why are they being used in that situation?
Thank you to John Beckhoffer for speaking with reporter Colin Stewart. Colin has written an article on the experiments being carried out in Beckhoffer's lab, complete with a cute diagram courtesy of Beckhoffer, with a little cartoon of Maxwell's demon. I'm linking to that on the podcast page too, fqxi.org/community/podcast. That's it for today. Thanks again to June Yee, Marcus Huber and Toby Fitzpatrick, and John Beckhoffer and Colin Stewart. And of course, thank you to you so much for listening. You can reach me on Twitter at fqxi.org, and we're also on Facebook at fqxi physics. And if you still use it, you can email us at podcast@fqxi.org. I've been Zia Morali.